foolish, in fact, you may think. Mayhaps you might think that me as a human being would be perhaps a little bit foolish, a little bit rascalish, a miscreant, you may say, or assume, or assumption-wise. Besides the point. I'm playing Frog Fractions, and there's nothing you can do to stop me. I'm playing Frog Fractions. There's nothing you can do to stop me. There's nothing you can do to stop me.
Welcome back, everybody. I know. Quite interesting, isn't it? If you watched or witnessed even the Instagram story that I accidentally put on the wrong account, but it doesn't really matter. We are discussing the titular Frog Fractions, the game that, may I be so bold, has inspired every single game that came after it. It was the definite...
It's a good game, all right? It's a good game. It's a great game. It's a fantastic game. Great, fantastic game. You have no idea how long it takes. That voice, that specific voice. It takes so much getting used to, and I haven't done it in a while. So I'm gonna be a bit voice cracky for a little bit. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to Independent Incidentals. Now, if you have noticed, yes, on the story there is one game. Frog Fractions, that we'll be talking about. And also, there's going to be another game. The theme about this specific episode, another fun voice crack, is the fact that they're both free. Now, here's the problem. On the first episode, I kind of detailed what I wanted to do. And that was to talk about a video game, a singular video game per episode, right? But... some of these games, unfortunately, are very cool and very neat, and I like to show them off, but the problem is I can't talk. I can't talk about Frog Fractions for upwards of 45 minutes. I am sorry. I hate to break your heart, but these games are a little smaller in scale. That's okay. And also, they're kind of way more niche, because one of them isn't even on Steam. They're both free. But one of them you have to do a bit of research and actually download. So, we'll talk about that one later. But besides the point, welcome to a little mini-series then, I like to call The Missing Miscellaneous. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yep. It's a great name. I came up with it myself. Definitely didn't look at a thesaurus for the past 10 minutes trying to come up with a fun name. No, I came up with that entirely on my own. So, shall we begin? I'm here. I'm waiting. So Frog Fractions. Let's put it this way. Subversive games come in two flavors, right? There's two ways you can make a game subversive in this modern era of video games. Break the mold, as it were. You can either do that using the story, the narrative, or you can do it using the mechanics, flipping them on their heads. Or you can do both. And in Frog Fractions' case, this is what it does. The writing is nonsensical. And what I mean by nonsensical is that there is one specific segment where they're literally in the background of this one specific segment in the game, there is a random narrator talking about the fictitious history of boxing, talking about how gentlemen's clubs are a proud and sacred figure inside of American history, and talking about the specific figureheads inside of that history. It's bonkers. It's crazy to me that someone came up with this game. The other ones, including the other game that I'm going to talk about, have cohesive rules about the world. You can actually wrap your head around the actual world and it makes sense. This game doesn't give a damn about where you are or how you cope with it. You are put through the ringer, either crossing through several different genres of game or trying to decipher the nonsensical text and trying to navigate through this fever dream of a game. I'm not going to use my own words. You know what? I'm gonna go to the Wikipedia article for this game. Okay, Wikipedia, you're on your hands and knees. I get it, but you can't keep doing this. All right, Wikipedia, please. Okay, whatever. You know, it's fine. Frog Fractions begins with a frog named Hop sitting on a lily pad. I didn't even know his name was Hop at the start. I'll be honest. I don't think it ever told us his name. Besides the point, the player controls Hop. You use your tongue to grab insects, and you have to protect fruit by eating the insects, right? After each level, you collect the fruit, and you can buy upgrades, such as getting a turtle you can ride on, being able to move left and right now, getting a cybernetic brain that doesn't do anything other than turning your score into scientific notation, also fun. And a lock-on target for targeting for your tongue, so you don't have to actually focus when you're targeting the insects. The game gets very interesting when you realize that the turtle can move downwards, and there's a gigantic stockpile, a gigantic hoard of fruits that have fallen into the lake that normally, from the normal game, it just canonically that the game has those fruits that fall down. You can collect about a billion fruits, which is literally what the indicator tells you, and buy a warp drive, which allows you and your upgraded turtle, which apparently is now a dragon, to and I quote from the Wikipedia article, allows Hop to ride Draggy through an asteroid field to bug Mars, where he is then battles an alien robot squid. This is where it gets interesting. All this other stuff is kind of like, okay, cool. This is kind of like we're kind of expanding on the concepts that are already given to us. We're fighting the bugs, or you're trying to get the bug Mars, right? He is then sent to bug court. I'm going insane right now. Hop is sent to bug court, where he signs a work visa because they are incentivized on killing Hop because he is a genocidal, perpetrator of the state of Bug Mars, right? But instead of that, he succeeds on answering a citizenship test, right? He asks questions about Bug Mars and being a citizen about Bug Mars and is given a work visa. He is allowed to work in Bug Mars. Surprisingly, he's still allowed to kill insects while he's in Bug Mars. Hop then travels because, you know, you still have your dragon. You can play the game as much as you want, but you don't really have to. You can just keep going down into the lake again because you're in the exact same place, but now you're in Mars. You're on Bug Mars. Then travels under the water below Bug Mars while listening to a narrated fictional history of the creation of boxing, where you basically have to, like, you know, go through a maze. There's a guy who's watching, like a mermaid who's watching TV underneath, inside of the maze. Hop activates a spaceship, and Musk. This is the part that got me as well, because during this game, mostly it's kind of just like a, you know, it's kind of coded as a educational game, right? Something that you would kind of play on the computer lab as a kid, right? But it doesn't actually, it's not educational. You don't learn anything. All that's different, because it's called Frog Fractions, is that the score is notated by using fractions, right? So based on what your score is, based on how many insects you are eating, you get a score based on how much fractions. It doesn't make sense. I don't know why you get specific fractions, but they just pop up. You don't learn anything. The most educational part about this game is when you get to the typing. This is actually before. This is before you get the bug Mars. You get to a typing section where it literally turns into a typing game. It turns into a typing game where you have to type words in order to eat the insects. Anyway, then the game turns into a text adventure where you have to... This part made no sense to me, because it's literally like a text adventure where you have to, you know, walk around the ship that you find at the bottom of the ocean, that where you, you know, were given a big description about the fictional history of boxing, or I guess the history of boxing on Bug Mars, where you have to find out a way to repair the ship, read the manual about the ship, fuel it so you can actually go into cryogenic sleep, and then, you know, get back to Bug Mars. Upon returning, your friend, the dragon, gives you, you know, has a few PR connections, apparently. Apparently had a few PR connections, and is able to get you presidency, grant you presidency in... or at least run for president in Bug Mars. I've said Bug Mars way too many times. It's starting to lose meaning. You know that moment where you repeat a word like Bug Mars, Bug Mars, Bug Mars, Bug Mars? It doesn't sound like anything anymore. I'm going insane. This game has brought me insanity. Anyway, the game turns into a Dance Dance Revolution where you have to basically do Dance Dance Revolution to win. Like a dance battle inside the electoral, whatever booth. But what do you call it? The place where they give like the speech, like the whatever. Point is, no matter what happens, you are elected president. And in a fake credit scene plays where they just, I don't know. And basically afterwards, the player then has to sell bug. In order to, this game, I don't understand it. I'm sorry. Because no matter what happens in the bug phase of the game, like, you're still, this game makes no sense. How is this a game? This game was made in 2012. As, you know, an entire, like, kind of, you know, reactionary kind of game. Like, you're supposed to be like, whoa, this game's crazy. But this game is generally, like, nonsensical to a point where, like, this game feels like a fever dream. This game does not feel real. This game, like, whenever I play it, it like, gives me a genuine reaction, I guess. Point is that it got refurbished for, I think, what was it? Windows. It was... made in Unity after the fact. I think it was made in Flash beforehand, and then once they had to migrate to Steam to be able to be, you know, playable, because Flash removed their playability features in 2020. It got a little bit of resurgence during the years, I think. Not resurgence in the way that you would think. Like, not a lot of people are playing this, but, like, there's, like, two Let's Play channels who I've seen play this. And a few other people who I've seen, like, I don't know, I guess comment on it. This game is very niche. I don't need to explain why, all right? This game is niche. The game took about an hour to complete. If you want to play it, it is free on Steam. Like I said, both of these games are going to be free on Steam, or not free, on both on Steam, but both of them are free. This one's on Steam. The other one, you'll have to find yourself. But before we do that, there's also so much more to talk about this game, including the fact that once you get through the actual full credits after you complete the bug choreography phase. That still racks my brain. Like, what? Who in their right mind? It's kind of like this kind of conspiracy, right? Where you have to sell bug in order to get to an actual, like, to, in order to control the populace, right? That they'll stay inside and watch bug in order to actually, you know, be malleable enough to control. I don't, these views don't reflect myself, of course, but I genuinely don't know. One of the reviews I saw for this game is like, oh, it's an interesting mechanic. It has very good humor. And no, this game is insane. This game is crazy. Like, what are we talking about here? This game, like, it literally has, like, no sense to it. Like, I can't grapple with, like, there's no mechanic to drive from. Like, there's the fractions, I guess. The beginning of the game where you have to eat bugs, right? But that's only, like, a fraction of the game. Get it? I don't know. Besides the point. You get to the end of the game, and after, the post-credits scene is literally you back in court saying, welcome, well done, you become the frog fractioneer. And I'm like, what happened? I didn't do any fractions. There's nothing. There's nothing here. This game's great, though. If you want to buy the DLC, it's 99 cents, I think, USD. Probably $1.39 Canadian. Where you get to wear a hat. That's it. That's literally it. You wear a hat. You get a hat, and you wear the hat, and you become Hop with his iconic hat. I'm going to let that soak in for a second. Just take in all the words, no matter how nonsensical they were. Take them all in and then come back to me, all right? We're going to play something from the soundtrack cuz it is funny. Frog Fractions, cuz it's not on, unfortunately. It's so unfortunately. It's not on Spotify, as I just soon realized, so I will look up the soundtrack for Frog Fractions online. That was the history, a history of boxing, made by the developer Twinbeard, and is one of the songs, I quote unquote, one of the OSTs in this game, in Frog Fractions. Now, let's move on to something more sensical. Here's the thing. These games that I talk about should not make any sense, but yet all these games that I mentioned in the past couple of months even, it's been 2 months already, that's crazy, even including Helix 2, have some sense to them. They are logistical within their rules and their world. Their rules and their world, apologies, I am tapped out. They have some logistical understanding, some logistical sense that can be derived from how the world interacts with the player. How it interacts with you, the player, right? It's understandable. It makes sense sometimes. Which is why these games like Undertale, even One Shot, Omamori, all these games fit under this kind of umbrella. What they specifically have in common, not only in the fact of being kind of esoteric in their own special way, but kind of also wrapping in their history and world within connection to the player, is that they break the fourth wall and grab a comically large hammer and break it into a million separate little pieces. The fourth wall doesn't exist in these kind of games anymore. With Frog Fractions, there's still a veil. There's being a show put on for you, but in Undertale and Offshot, or One Shot, apologies. Undertale and One Shot, these games have you being the dictator. You interact with the player and are a kind of a player in this game. Especially with One Shot, which I might cover later if I feel the need to replay it. possibly over the winter break. Who knows? There's a whole shopping list of other games I want to play over the winter break. But there's another game. There's a kind of precursor to all these games. The game is called Off, and it was made by two Belgian developers, Morris Ghost, who did all the design, the game development, and all of the character design, and all everything that you see and interact with. And Alice Conrad Coldwood, who makes the music, everything that you hear in the game. Like I said before, these games kind of break the fourth wall. But this one does it in an interesting way. You're immediately at the start of the game greeted by a cat who refers to you as kind of the puppet master of a character called the Batter. The Batter also constantly communicates to you, which is kind of weird because you're just kind of controlling him and he's kind of like following along anyway. Besides the point, the Batter's main goal is to purify the separate zones that this world is made up of. There's three, technically four, zones that each are ruled over by a guardian. These guardians, in the perspective of you, the player, seem corrupt. The first one especially. You meet the Don, who is a kind of arrogant, egomaniacal ruler who treats their workers poorly and doesn't care about this kind of specter uprising that's been happening recently. A lot more specters have been haunting the lands, and you, the Batter, have to purge these specters. However, like kind of like a computer program or an AI that's gone haywire, he realizes that the main source of these specters is, in fact, the dictators themselves. The Don, the Bird, which is the guardian of Zone 2, and a big fat guy for Zone 3. I forget his name specifically. Let me look that up real quick. But besides the point, you, the player, zones, there we go. You, the player, are pretty much, there you go. So the controller, the ruler of Zone 1, is the Don, who is a kind of weird thumb person who has a very strangely shaped skull that kind of wraps, his entire skull kind of wraps over his eyes and body. There's Josfit, which is a bird creature that kind of takes the form of a cat, as it were. And Enoch, which is a big, big tubby man who kind of runs a more official background. And of course, there is a zone that I'm very hesitant to talk about because there's a lot of spoilers about this game that I don't want to really spoil too heavily. So what I will say is that throughout the game, you are kind of running through the motions, as it were. You think throughout the game that you are helping the civilians of each separate zone. You interpret yourself as a kind of hero, right? Helping the Batter's whims to defeat and purify the world. Here's the issue, though. Once you defeat the Guardian, who the Batter believes is the culprit of all this corruption, all this spectrification, whatever you want to call it, when you return to one of these zones, everything is dead. Everything died with the Guardian. Which is the most interesting twist I think I've seen in most of a game. And like, especially a game like this. It doesn't tell you outright that you're doing a bad thing. In fact, the Batter is the only person that's encouraging you. And the guide, who is the Guardian of Zone Zero, which is the first zone you encounter, doesn't really pay you any mind. They think that your actions are somewhat foolish, and they don't really care, as it were, until it's too late. The combat is a bit, what's the word, repetitive in a lot of ways. Because throughout the game, you meet these little things, these little rings called add-ons. Add-ons are these little spheres that are named, I think, Alpha, Epsilon, and Omega, respectively. And they all do specific things. One of them, I think, is for mainly buffing the party. One of them is for ranged attacks, being able to hit multiple enemies at the same time. And one of them is mainly for damage. And of course, you have the batter, who is your main character of the party. It's an RPG. It kind of follows along like a more of a real-time action RPG, in a way. Because your actions are dictated by a timer that is ticking at the bottom. And once that timer's up, you can do something. But the opponents, the specters, or whatever you're fighting, also have these timers. Now, we're going to talk a bit more about the gameplay, because I think it also kind of highlights specifically what Morris was going for here. Specifically in the game, a lot of it's kind of rudimentary because it was made in RPG Maker. RPG Maker is a paid once-a-lifetime subscription to a game engine that allows you to make RPG games. It's what it's specialized for. If you try to make anything else, it kind of, you know, doesn't really bode well. If you'd be better off making something in, say, Unity or, yeah, I don't know, Godot, for example. I'm dying on this hill. I don't care. But specifically with how the sprites look, they're very kind of, what's the word? Pixelated, sure, but simple in a way. You don't see a lot of details regarding it unless you see the actual, you know, when you get into dialogue, that's when you see the portrait of the character on the side that describes and shows what they look like. The workers are very simple. They kind of have a blockhead and they're all looking the exact same. Assuming that these guardians are what created these zones, you can only assume that they wanted to make them look exactly the same so that everyone would be equal in their own special way, which kind of also ties back to the ending of the game, which I might get to, depending on whether or not I feel like spoiling it. So, the combat, specifically, is repetitive, like I said. But the sprites that are changing when you actually get into combat are interesting, because when you get further into the zones, you notice that the workers themselves, the things that are upholding the society, are also becoming corrupted. You see these strange-looking black tendrils sprouting out of these normal-looking workers. Their necks are elongated. Some of them have, like, gigantic carnivorous teeth. They look horrifying. And the combat music specifically also does not make you feel welcome in a very specific way. When the music starts playing, which I might actually play right now, you immediately feel off. Like, it doesn't feel good. It's vaudeville music. You hear the trumpets, but they're kind of remixed in a very specific way that makes it sound almost like you're in an infinite loop. Like, it's kind of repeating over and over and over again. Like, this is like kind of like another day of the job, you know? But also kind of giving that weird, old-timey feeling. Like, this is something that someone else is experiencing. Again, this game is, while it's understandable, like, you can derive meaning from this game, it's also very esoteric. A lot of the meaning that you can grab from this game is only discovered at the very end. So, we'll give a little intermission. I'll play the battle music, which is called Pepper Steak, which was made by alias Conrad Coldwood. And I'll meet you back. See you in a moment.
This is how AI...
Oh, God. You know what? I'll just talk for a second. Because I'm not giving any free promo. These advertisements aren't going to get me this time. All right? You can't stop me. All right. Anyway. Please, sit back and listen to the insanity ensue. How's that for you? It's vaudeville music. It's kind of electro swing. But it's still, even without the context, because this is the first thing that I kind of, you know, this is the first thing that I interacted with when I was first discovering what off was. And it already kind of unsettled me in a specific way. Right now, I actually have it as my wake-up alarm, because it just kind of like, oh, I'm back. Oh, a purification process. Oh, God. Let me get my bat. But yeah, no, it's interesting because it kind of makes a kind of tonal dissonance between you purifying all these ghosts and purifying the world as a whole, which I will get to in a moment. And also additionally, what's the word? The kind of jovial music of this song in particular clashed together, like as if the batter's kind of getting some kind of, you know, rhythm or groove from constantly purging all these souls, right? Like I said before, you can already tell something is off about this game based on when you revisit a zone that you have officially purified by defeating one of its guardians. The entire world is blank. It doesn't exist anymore. All of the labels don't have any writing on them, except sometimes they have like a few question marks on them. Everything is completely white, and you can feel the world is a bit off. There's like this weird kind of like ambience of a man just like screaming for help in the background behind a door, right? And during your adventures through Huyir, the only encounter, there's no stylized ghosts or anything like that. All there is this one weird hyper-realistic entity that kind of just has like a big bulbous head. It looks kind of goofy, I'll be honest. It has like a boxing gloves as well. And of course, there's a bit of symbolism here as well, which I'll get to in a moment. But besides the point. Spoilers ahead. If you want to play off, it is free. All you have to do is Google off game. Right? There's going to be a website that'll bring you to, if I'm actually correct, let me just make sure I don't lead you the wrong path, audience, of course. If you go to off game download. The problem was is that this game was originally made in French. So a bunch of fans of the game had to translate the game from French into English. So if you go to this specific website. Is that the website? I don't think that's the website. That seems a bit fishy. Hold on. Let me find the actual website. English translations. The 3.0 is the most recent one. Of course. Okay, I guess that is the website. Okay, fair enough. So, you go down to this website, zchr.org/off, and then you can download the game. You'll have to unzip it. And you have to actually click on the actual. You can't just load it. You have to actually click. I mean, I guess you can if you know how to do it. You can hook it up to your Steam profile, but it's not gonna actually be on your Steam profile, you know, universally. You still have to like find a way to hook it up to the application of off. With that being said, spoilers ahead. The whole point of the game is to purify the world. Go through all the zones, purify them all, help the batter in this kind of weird, ominous goal, which eventually leads you to the final zone. This zone is different from all the others because it kind of leads you on through the different zones, and it's kind of more, way, way more esoteric than the other ones. It goes through different flashbacks, dream sequences of this boy named Hugo, who Is his name Hugo? Let me double check. Let me just see if I'm right on this real quick. If I'm right on the money. Hugo? Yeah, Hugo is the child who created this entire world and what is assumed to be, actually, the symbolism for his life. Most of what you discover in this room is him tackling, wishing his mother would come back. His father is actually the batter, who you, the player, has come to destroy. You have come to destroy his entire dream, and then him. It is a very, very moving moment, and it is so, so gut-wrenching when you do it. Because once you destroy the kid, once the kid is gone, vanquished, the entire room goes white. It's just completely blank. Nothing there. Emptiness. And at that point, the cat who you met at the start of the game stops you, stating that your actions as the player, as the puppeteer of this batter, have become corrupted, immoral. Even though you realized throughout this entire game, you should have let on that you were destroying this world, and yet you still kept on with it. You couldn't leave it alone, because that would cause you to leave the game, and you wanted to beat the game. However, the cat leaves you with a choice. The judge, as he's called, leaves you with a choice. Either you side with the batter and destroy what's left of the world, turning it off, or you side with the judge and you destroy the batter and you leave the world completely blank except for him. For him to mourn the loss of all everyone that was in this world. Everyone that he lost. Of course, I chose to side with the judge to begin with, even though there was a bit of, you know, hesitation. There's a lot of people in the fan base who first sided with the batter because they thought they just should end what they've already started. They thought it would cause more pain to leave the world unfinished than to continue destroying it. So I sided with the judge, because I knew that it was the right thing to do. And immediately when you get into combat, like I said before, like the batter portrays all these workers as corrupt, all these souls as corrupt. The judge then portrays, because you're now controlling him, portrays you, the batter, your player character, as corrupt. He grows a crocodile mouth, and all of the attachments, all your add-ons, get absorbed into the batter. And you, now controlling the judge, have to destroy what you've started. Of course, if you start with the batter, nothing changes, and you just have to destroy your teacher, the one who has taught you. And pretty much the idea of this game, the main theory is that the interpretation of this world is that the Hugo, the child, the creator of this world, created this world as a kind of dream of a sense, to escape from their mother leaving them. So they created the Dawn, they created Japhet, they created Enoch as these son of division, these people in their life that they interpreted and created within this world, recreated in this world. This game is very moving. I'm still reminiscing about everything. There's still, I could talk my head off about, you know, Zachary, the shopkeeper who talks to only you, the player, rather than the batter themselves. I could talk about each specific zone and what they kind of hone in on. But the only way to actually experience this game is to play it yourself. And that's what I've been pushing this entire time. And even if I made it a little bit different format, the missing miscellaneous, I think, is a very interesting different route to go down, because I feel like it gives me more opportunity to talk about more and more niche games. Because even if I can't talk my head off about one specific game for the whole 45 minutes, about their mechanics, about how they push the envelope in a specific genre, it's these games in particular that still instill the art form of a game to me. They allowed the game to take on a new form rather than just being something that you can play. They allow you to change your perspective about what it means to be moral. Or they just allow you to become the bug president of Bug Mars. And if, you know what? Whatever challenges the experience, whatever challenges you, the player, to experience new things, to get out of your comfort zone, to be in a world where you are not knowledgeable about, that you have no clue what in the world is going on. And with that, I think that is the end of this episode of Independent Incidentals. I might make a few more episodes in this specific subseries, who knows? But until then, I think this is a perfect place to end off. Please, if you want to support the creators who made these games for free, please check out both Off and Frog Fractions, because I'm sure you'll get a little kick out of both of them, both in completely, completely different regards. But it just shows how diverse this entire medium can be, how many feelings, how many things it can interpret, and how many things it can kind of manifest itself into. So, I've been listening to a lot of King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. I'll admit it. So, I'll leave you off with a few songs off of them. I'll go through specifically Last Oasis. That's a really good one. All is known is very, it has such good drive. It's kind of like an extension of one of their albums, of Nonagon Infinity. And you know what? I think also Muddy Water also has a pretty good drive to it as well. So that is The Last Oasis, All Is Known, and Muddy Water by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard off of the Gumboot Soup album. One day I'll have to talk about them. Maybe next term I'll be expanding my horizons and talk about, you know, artists, books, things that don't get a lot of recognition nowadays. But that'll be for later. I hope you all have a productive... It's exam season soon! Oh, God! But the end is near, everybody. Good luck. And I wish you all a fantastic week. Bye-bye for now.